Between a Rock and a Hard Place. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Colleen, and we're here to tell you a little bit about life in Iraq.
Woohoo!
So we talked about female and male-dominated spaces. When you were around Kurdish or Arabic women, how much of that tension did you feel? Was it uncomfortable? And how much of that do you think came from what you know and like women actually being like, hey, don't talk to me?
So in general, I almost never speak to women publicly that I don't know.
Sure.
Right. So if I'm at a restaurant, like, and it's very natural, common, just to be ignored, right? Because girls go out with girls, and they, you know, that's their time. And there is a lot of, it is a bit of a dance though, right? Because there's dynamics between, you know, the guys and the girls, right? Even if they never speak to each other, there's stuff going on, right?
Yeah.
And everybody's kind of very closely curating their image, right? Mm-hmm. Through both phone, social media, and presence in public spaces. So that's, I would say that, but in general, I don't really get to talk, don't talk to people that I don't know. Now if I, you know, if I have students and their families, then by all means, always show respect and greet people publicly when you recognize them. And it's, people do like to be recognized. And so publicly, so whether you're, you know, a guy or a girl, if you recognize someone, it's good to, I think, recognize them publicly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tensions. I can't think of a lot of tensions that I've felt. I haven't been in too many difficult situations. I think when moving between communities, I think I felt more tension, or I've at least been more aware, because things are changing based on the community I'm working with. Right. Mm-hmm. So I was very comfortable around Kurdish people, right? I taught them, had a lot of interaction. But when I moved to Yazidis, well, that's a whole different story of what's going on there. So, and then there's Christian communities too. So I think moving between communities, it's the process of kind of learning and being just very observant, right, of mm-hmm. your surroundings and how you're treated as a guest. So being a guest is a you know, superpower and skill that you have to develop to be a good guest. And they are extraordinary hosts, right? And that's also something we have to learn. I think the ladies have to learn that a lot with greater detail, because they'll get really judged if they're bad hosts, right?
Yes.
And I people would just assume that I would be clueless about that because I'm a guy and I'm, you know, not married. So they would just assume that I'm not able to host or cook or do anything. But so there's differences there. But then when I was in southern Iraq, I was really on high alert because I had no idea what I was doing there. And there's other complications of, you know, having spent no time there before. And then totally different religious community that I'm working in. And then I was teaching at an all-girls school where all the conservative families sent their daughters so that they would have no interaction with men. So then I was super trying to be on my best behavior, but that without knowing all the rules. In general, I think that the reason maybe I haven't felt a lot of tension is that Iraqis overlook faults a lot for foreigners, and mm-hmm. they are very generous. And if you do say something that's horribly awkward or wrong, they'll try to rectify the situation for you, or it'll be left unsaid and you'll never know about what you did, right?
Yeah.
But everybody else will. So I've probably, you know, made many mistakes that people have generously overlooked. It's a real lesson in hospitality, the fact that people are not quick to take offense, but to kind of sidestep that for your sake. when I first went to Kurdistan, I definitely felt nervous around ladies because I had no idea what the, I expected it to be a lot more conservative than it was.
How did you see the expat community change while you were there or in the different places that you were?
So I think the expat community was a lot smaller and more tight-knit when I first arrived. Mm-hmm. And they're composed of a lot of families actually that had been working in the area for quite a while. So a lot of people who had a lot of context in the cities they lived in and the places they lived in. And over time, there's just been so much more turnover and so much more volume of foreigners coming through, and not just Americans, but people from all over, right? Aid organizations, international aid organizations from all sorts of countries have been through. So for the place, they have gotten used to seeing a lot more foreigners pass through, work, and leave. So I'll say, like, there's way less of a wow factor now when a foreigner arrives. You might get stopped on the street. People will always want to know where you're from, what you're doing, and that's an area of interest that will stay. But it's a little less of a novelty to, mm-hmm. to society that there'd be someone like you there working. So the kind of work has changed. There's a lot of aid that's come in. And for between 2015 and 2017, 18, there was just a lot of organizations. Since then, it's become very small again. So there's far fewer organizations working in Iraq. And so it's becoming a smaller community again, from my observation. Those organizations are still there, but maybe they've pulled their offices out of Suli or Duhok. And maybe they have one big office in Erbil, and then they have, you know, whoever their staff are will be local partners in, you know, Suli, Duhok, or any other region. Mm-hmm. And they won't actually have a lot of foreign workers in those places. And a lot of those aid organizations shifted to southern Iraq, to Mosul after 2017. Now I'm not sure where they are. So the cities have grown a lot over those same years. A lot more shopping, a lot more malls. There's just been the cities have grown quite a bit in the last years. And over the last 7 years, the biggest growth, I think, in like a city like Duhok or Erbil has been from people moving from southern Iraq into the Kurdish. You have lots of Christians and Sunnis and some Shia groups all relocating their homes to these northern Kurdish cities. So that's the biggest growth that I've seen.
Did you find most of your friendship and community in the expat community or in other places?
I think while I worked at the high schools, most of my community was my team and the students and their families. And mm-hmm. that was a really, really wonderful experience, being so connected to families. So most of my community would not have been expats during the first years. But after, when I moved to Duhok, that kind of flipped. Most of my community at that time were the, you know, international workers and people working in the camps and my team. And so I think some of that was a difference between maybe Suli and Duhok, but also just having less of a foundation in Duhok with families. Mm-hmm. And I think Duhok is a little bit more private of a city. So because of that, most of my community were expats in Duhok, my own team, or non-native people in Duhok. What I mean is not people from Duhok. Right. So I had a whole bunch of Christian friends from Mosul who were displaced out of Mosul, and I'd hang out with them a lot. Or I had a lot of Yazidi friends from Sinjar, or even Syrian friends who'd come over from Syria and now were living in Duhok. So basically, I found that a lot of the families who had migrated to Duhok We're up for starting friendships, right? And relationships, and up for having me over to their homes and connecting or going out. And so it just shifted because it seemed that a lot of people from Duhok were pretty well established there. And I find that the circles of friendships go really deep, but sometimes the circles are rather small. In my case, I ended up connecting with more people from outside. That's not to say I don't know people from Duhok, but
right. Yeah.
In general,
I noticed that more in Duhok than even in Haller, that it was like they didn't know how to be friends with people outside of the friends that they kind of grew up with, because Duhok is a little bit more villagey and everybody's that's there is there and has been there forever and their grandparents were friends. And so there was a little bit of a like, we like you and we want you to be part of this, but we don't know. We're not quite sure how that works.
Yeah, so, I'd agree, because I think the people in Duhok are very, very respectful people. They treat you very courteously wherever you go, generally. But the, you know, the how you connect and be friends, that's a different question. And I think that that's, you know, a testament to actually, up until recently, it has been a very small place with not a lot of foreigners there. So it's understandable that that's kind of an adjustment. Also, they have a, you know, a long history and, you know, deep connections to families and neighbors, and very close with cousins and siblings and big families. So if you think about it, they have a very rich social life already.
Yeah.
Right?
This is the middle of the podcast where we interrupt ourselves to tell you things. And the only thing I really want to tell you is that you should go to Iraq because it's awesome and we'd love to get you there.
Did you have a favorite food while you lived in Iraq?
I think the best food in Iraq is home food. And again, I didn't spend much time in people's homes. So, but actually I love dolma and yapra, and there's some meat dishes that I really like. I really like kuzi, which is like this slow cooked lamb over rice that's just very tender and delicious. They've got a lot of good food. So
did you ever go out at night with the guys and do the serupe, the head and foot soup?
Definitely did do that. Yes. And actually it tastes really good. So if you can get past the description, I kind of liked it.
Great. Did you have any favorite adventures or experiences?
Oh man. Let's see. I mean, of course, but there's just a lot to choose from. Yeah. I think I did survive a high speed taxi crash on a highway. And
yes.
I've gotten a lot of mileage out of that story over the years. Should I go there?
Yeah, you should. Yeah. Tell the story.
Tell
it's
the
a good one.
Story.
Well, I was on my way to get a flight out of the country for Christmas to meet a cousin in Germany. I got in a cab between Suli and Erbil to get there, and it was a full cab. So I was in the back middle seat with no seatbelts. The back seat almost never has seatbelts.
Yeah.
And the two people in the front did have seatbelts. So we were going, and he just, when it came to the, you know, straight portion of the highway between Kirkuk and Erbil, he just started going so fast. And I think when I last looked at the speedometer, we were going 160 kilometers an hour.
Oh, my word.
somewhere near, like, this, I think that's like about 90.
Uh-huh.
But eventually somebody tried to cut us off and we lost control of the car. And we slid into the divider of the highway and crashed into it and flipped over. And then the vehicle started rolling across the oncoming lanes of traffic.
Oh.
And as we are rolling, my door bends off the car. And then I fall out of the car with the two other guys. So this all happened very fast.
Yeah.
The next thing I was aware of was that I was outside of the car, face down in a field, and I had all this like kind of moist dirt in my mouth, and so I guess I wasn't aware of whether I had legs or not, or whether the car was on top of me, or what was going on. But so I just figured I'd just lay there, and when I looked over, there was another guy face down and then to my left, and the other guy on my right was in the same position. But I just look at them and they just hopped on their feet immediately and just kind of like casually were like brushing off the dirt from their clothes as if like nothing had happened. So we were perfectly fine. We'd miraculously landed on a field with moist dirt between Kirkuk and Erbil. And I stayed there just a little longer laying down because I didn't want to hurt anything. And while I was there, somebody like picked up my glasses and brought it over to me. And someone else picked up my phone that had flown out and brought it to me. And by that time, I finally did get to my feet, and the car was totaled. So it actually was a bit emotional. When I called my parents, that's when the kind of release came. I hadn't realized how much tension I had in my body, but I went over to the taxi, got my stuff out, and somebody else offered me a ride, and I got in the next cab and made it to Erbil to get my plane on time to make Christmas with my
no major injuries or
I was really sore. My ribs were really sore, but I mean, not a scratch, really, not a scratch physically.
Your glasses and your phone were both fine.
Everything was fine. And the other thing about that, which was funny, as I was driving away, which is a very, very Kurdish thing, the other taxi driver that offered me a ride, as we were driving away, he kept on looking back at me in the back seat and trying to explain that he had seen everything. And just to simulate it, he would yank his steering wheel back and forth. No! Just to show that he saw that what happened to our car. So, and I realized after the fact that as we rolled across the highway, I involuntarily screamed at just this involuntary thing out of my body, and no one else made a sound. So I was a little embarrassed afterward that I was the one that couldn't just, you know, just take it silently. But that was amazing. I've had a lot of funny experiences in people's offices. Anyway, I'm really grateful that story didn't end badly.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
We're all glad.
Yeah. Other fun things. I think if you're in Kurdistan, there's so many cool places to go. So I loved going to Lalish, which is the most important Yazidi temples, and then going to Korek Mountain, and you know, being up in the mountains in the snow and renting a cabin there. But there's a lot of cool historic things to do in Kurdistan, and have a lot of good memories of going there with friends and teammates. There's a lot to see.
What do you miss most?
I really like walking through cities, and I like that Duhok was really walkable. And it's neat because in a small place or in a place like that, people really get to know you everywhere you go. And so even though it's not a small town, Duhok, I mean, it's a big city, but everywhere you go, it's like you're known, and you have these little personal relationships with every little shopkeeper and every place you go. And if you're coming from, you know, a city in America, that might not be an experience you have often, but it actually does fulfill something in your heart, I think, to have all these little connections and to be placed, right? Even if there's, you know, some discomforts from being an outsider, there's a lot of little things that I appreciate about it. And so I lived for a while, I lived above a mishmish, which is a sweets shop that delivers cakes and sweets all over Duhok. And in the morning, sometimes I just go downstairs and help them, you know, set the tables or just sit down and, you know, just a lot of just very familial kind of casual friendships where you just hang out. And I do really miss that. Yeah, I miss the hikes as well. There's a lot of cool places to hike in Kurdistan, and it's a real fun activity to go, you know, put some food together and go up a mountain and spend a morning up there. And I miss people, of course. I miss Elmo.
Of course, that was assumed already.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, we've talked some about reverse culture shock coming from Kurdistan back to the U.S. What's it like for you going back to Mexico? What things are like, wow, this has really changed? Or because it's been a long time since you've lived in Mexico, right?
In like 18 years.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think to back up, I didn't have a lot of culture shock when I moved to Iraq. And I credit that partially because of my background here in Mexico. Something about that wasn't completely, totally foreign to me. So I can't say that I feel a lot of reverse culture shock either. It's really nice to step back into Mexico. And I've desired to do that for many years. I think that whatever the shock is, it's just because of it's a life transition, right? Mm-hmm. And so taking on a new job or stuff like that. But Mexico is a very warm culture as well. And so I've actually, the city I'm living in right now reminds me of Dahuk. It's surrounded by mountains. It's super small and walkable. And people are rather conservative. So like, you know, people are glancing in my shopping cart, you know, inspecting my items, you know, as I'm in the lines, you know, there's like not a lot of personal space. Yeah. And so there's a lot that reminds me of Iraq, and I'm actually really enjoying it. But it feels a little more like home. So I am an outsider in the new city. I didn't grow up in Northern Mexico. So that means there's a lot of cultural things that I'm having to learn here because it's just, there's a lot of different differences between North and South. So
yeah,
I'm still kind of learning things culturally. I don't know if that's a good answer to the question, but
it makes sense. I mean, I felt like some of those things that for me moving to Nashville, culture shock or reentry was eased in some part by the fact that the South is such a different culture than where I grew up. It was easy to treat it as, oh, this is just another foreign country rather than like recognizing all the things that were different from where I grew up or that, you know,
really interesting.
It wasn't how I experienced it growing up.
I'd say I think maybe I'm just fortunate that the place that I have landed here has a really kind of tight-knit special community and they're very hospitable. So it's not like I'm starting out as a stranger. And so I think I would feel the loneliness probably a lot more if I were starting out like in a new place completely alone, right? That's really nice.
And your Spanish is all coming back to you.
Well, yes and no. I think, you know, after so I am a native and fluent speaker, but there's a lot of work to do, let's just say. And do people do make fun of me, so.
You have
that's nothing new.
You have like Kurdish words come to mind instead of the Spanish one, or I mean, you got a lot of language.
Oh man, you know, I know in Kurdistan, I would certainly sometimes Spanish would be it wouldn't be an issue until I spoke to someone on the phone in Spanish, and then the next day in class, I'd mix in some Spanish. But actually, no, there are Kurdish expressions that come to my mind when living life. And I hope that's always the case. I want it to be with me forever. So, and if I lose it, I have to go back to Kurdistan and get some more. Yeah.
We've taught our roommates over the years, several Kurdish phrases that are still a part of our lives. Yeah. So.
Yep. And we frequently ask each other, like, what time is it in Kurdish? Because it's easier to think of it that way than in English, which is bizarre.
But. Yeah, I think with at least with my even with my siblings, we grew up speaking English to each other inside the home, right? Mm-hmm. And Spanish in other places, but now when I reconnect with siblings, we basically speak in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And what that says to me is that this is the time that we shared together, right? And the place that we shared most of our lives together. So speaking Spanish cuts past everything else and goes right to home, right? And so it, I think it's an unconscious thing, but that's a way of being kind of close to each other. And so I think that's, I could do that with, you know, teammates from Kurdistan too, you know, a little Kurdish word here and there brings back a lot.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking to us.
Yeah. Thanks for giving us your time. Yeah.
Sure thing.
Yeah.
Very, very nice to talk to you.
We'll have to touch base again with some stories from Kurdish history.
Okay.
And or Kurdish myth, maybe. I don't know which where those stories all fall, but it'd be fun to have you share some of those stories.
I definitely need to polish up and get some for student consultants.
There you go.
Yeah. To help me out with that. But yeah, I'd love to.
We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at Servant Group International on Facebook or Instagram, and you should check out our blog and complete transcripts over at servantgroup.org.
And it's really helpful for us if you share our podcast or leave a review on whatever platform you listen to this podcast on. It helps us know that people are listening, and you can let us know what you want to hear next.
Thanks for listening.
Excuse me. All right. Edit that out.
It's gonna go when they end the bloopers part.